I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 4th of March. Before we get rolling on media, the darker side of media in 2014, we do want to thank all of you who contributed during our winter membership drive, which ended yesterday. We had more than 4,800 people pledge, 1,000 sustaining pledges, and also 1,070 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. And you donated over $578,000 to fund all of the programs that you depend on. And we thank you very, very much. This hour, the documentary Shadows of Liberty, it covers a lot of territory. It's being shown all over the country right now. It covers the way news was disseminated at the founding of this nation and how it is being disseminated now. Who owns the airwaves now? And many stories, disturbing stories, where reporters uncovered Nike sweatshops in Vietnam, CIA links to Nicaraguan Contras, and the crack cocaine trade in Los Angeles, and a possible missile strike which took down a U.S. airline. Some of the reporters on these stories were terminated. One committed suicide after being disgraced for his groundbreaking work for the San Jose Mercury News. This hour, Jean-Philippe Tremblay will be with us. He's director, producer, and writer of Shadows of Liberty and is in the midst of a coast-to-coast grassroots screening tour of this film, which also includes post-film discussions on media-related issues. He is from Quebec. He received a master's in film production at the London Film School, and Shadows of Liberty is his first feature documentary film. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have more than a few when you look at the state of media, particularly the news we receive in 2014. Our phone number, and we have a full hour to talk today. How about that? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Jean-Philippe, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Really interesting stories and disturbing stories, but let's start, if you don't mind, with the founding of the USA and what our founding fathers had in mind for press. It was really interesting. All the film is interesting, but to look at how news was disseminated and money that was given to make all kinds of newspapers flourish in America.
That's right. In our film, we describe American history, and I should say American media history. We pick out some of the most important moments that made the media, that promoted media and democracy in the United States. And we look back at the forefathers of the country where, you know, they began the American experiment, which was really to bring democracy to the world. And one of the forefathers we really look at is Thomas Paine. And Tom Paine really brought forth the idea. I mean, he was a journalist himself, and he believed that democracy was centered around media. Therefore, to understand that media is a central pillar of democracy, which means it's information for the people and by the people. So in order for people to make decisions about who they vote for, how they run their lives, decisions about their education, the kind of employment they get into, they need information about what the government is doing, what corporations is doing, what people are doing in the name of the country. And for that, people need information. So that's what we learn about the forefathers of this country and how democracy really began and how it was set up. And we should also mention that in the Constitution, this is something that Amy Goodman says in her film, in the Constitution, journalism is the only job that is protected by the Constitution. And that's something we need to remind ourselves about.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was somebody talking about Tom Paine. The film said, if you give citizens the information they need, they can govern.
Absolutely. And that's really what democracy is based on. It's about people making choices about who runs the country, who is in power. These are our votes that put these people to run the country. So in order to make those votes, in order to run our lives properly, we need information. And that's exactly right. People can govern themselves if they have the right information.
Some of the stories are extremely disturbing, and let's outline a couple of them right now before we talk about the state of ownership of media in America, because this story starts with some problems in that regard. The CBS News, I believe it was in 1996, investigation after the Vietnam War embargo was lifted, looking at labor markets that were found in that country, cheaper labor markets that were found in the country. And particularly Nike doing subcontracting work, paying people 16 cents an hour to make shoes. It turned out to be a very big story in this country with a lot of protests against Nike. And then there was to be a second follow-up expose. And what happened?
Well, then the expose was taken out off the air. I mean, it was in the schedule of CBS, and they took the follow-up expose off the schedule, off the air. Roberta Baskin was demoted. She was the chief correspondent at CBS News for a number of years, quite a prestigious position, an important position in any news organization, and she was demoted to something very a small kind of a. I forget exactly what her position was, but it was basically a joke, making a joke of everything she stood for. And we have to remind ourselves that Roberta Baskin, not only was she chief correspondent of CBS News, but she'd also received dozens and dozens of journalistic awards for her work. And her work focuses on keeping power accountable. So she reports about corporations. And in this instance, at CBS News, she talks about the Nike Corporation and sweatshops that they're involved in Vietnam. And when we understand that in the United States, it is the only democracy in the world that made broadcast, that's radio and television, handed it over to private corporations in order for them to run it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we understand that broadcast belongs to the people and managed by the government, which it is in all other democracies in the world, here in the United States, the government in 1934, under the Communications Act, handed it over to private corporations. And the bottom line for private corporations is profit. So when we understand that CBS News makes a deal with the Nike Corporation in order to broadcast the 1998 Olympics, at the time when Roberta Baskin was doing her expose on Nike, that's where we see a problem. And one day, Roberta Baskin was scratching her head about, why she had been demoted. She had asked questions in the CBS offices. And one day she turns on the TV and she sees the CBS broadcasters wearing Nike logos. And we have a producer from CBS in the film that tells a story along with Roberta Baskin that says that the journalists, the newsroom at CBS News, they were furious because management at CBS News had given all the journalists goodie bags, you can say. And in the goodie bags, there was Nike parkas, all sorts of Nike paraphernalia, and they had to wear it on the air, not only when they were reporting about the Olympics, but even in their New York studios.
So they were becoming human billboards for Nike.
We've entitled that story. Our film is divided into chapters, and we did call that story Human Billboards, and that's an example of what's happening when news is owned and controlled by private corporations.
There seems to be a whole movement, and I've never fully understood this, and you touch on this in your film, a lot of what we're seeing now are these reality programs, these sting operations to make sure that we can get people who are doing inappropriate things, preferably government officials who we can entrap and ensnare in some ways. It's stuff that, you know, all of these dramas that we see about usually blonde women who are very attractive, who have done something wrong or they've been accused of doing something wrong, all of these trials that take place that really don't affect a lot of people's lives, and yet they're the mainstay of cable news and of regular news, that you're seeing all of these stories and you say, well, this might have some level of human interest, but why should I be caring about this? Why has that happened?
Well, it's happening because the control of news and information is in the wrong hands. When you put it in the hands of private corporations, they care about one thing. They care about making profit. And what happens also with these corporations is that they're not only owners of media outlets. They have many other different business interests. I mean, they have defense contracts. They make other products like light bulbs. They have theme parks. They have movie studios and TV stations where they're responsible for bringing us entertainment. So what we see in this instance is a blurring of the lines between news and entertainment. And that blurring of the lines is getting more and more intense. And we can see this in on television today. And in every aspect of our lives, you know, part of the reason as well with these reality shows is that these corporations don't have to pay actors and writers and producers to actually make these shows. And it's a bit of what they've done to their newsrooms as well. Even though they're making profits, they're really gutting their newsrooms. So where you had a newsroom of hundreds of journalists, 200 or 300 journalists, those same newsrooms today have maybe 25 people working in those offices. So it's a real tragedy about what's happening to news and information in the hands of these corporations. Jeff Cohen, in our film, an acclaimed journalist, says in our film that the people who own the media would rather a nation of mindless consumers rather than a nation of active citizens. And that's something we really have to think about.
What was the figure? I don't know if it was just in television or if it included newspapers and over what time range, but somebody gave the figure of 35,000 news jobs have been lost. Over what time period was that, Jean-Philippe?
We do have that figure in the film, and that's from 2008 to where we finished the film. So that would
really?
Be 2012. Yeah.
Wow.
We finished making the film in 2012. And I mean, that is exactly what's happening in the United States. And this trend has began, you know, about 20 years ago. We have David Simon in the film. David Simon was a journalist for the Baltimore Sun. Now he has produced some shows at HBO, some really great shows like The Wire, mm-hmm. and Treme at HBO. And he comes in our film and he talks about his experience at the Baltimore Sun. And he left the Baltimore Sun in 1995, if I'm not mistaken. And at the time, there was a new CEO at the Baltimore Sun. And David Simon describes in our film how the CEO, before he was he came in to own the Baltimore Sun, he used to sell cereal, breakfast cereal. And when he did his first speech in the newsroom, never once did he mention the role of a newspaper. Never once did he mention the importance of journalism and holding power accountable and writing stories for the good of the people. And when David Simon left, at the time, the Baltimore Sun, the profit margin in that year was 37%. And they were gutting their newsrooms, even when they were making 37% profit. So what happens, again, is that when these private corporations come to own and control media, their number one goal is profit. That's the bottom line. And to do that, they gut out their newsroom. They minimize the stories that they're going to cover. They try to bring us things that are very easy, that actually have nothing to do with the good of the people and how we can better run our lives, how we can be informed about the world. And what happens is the blurring of the lines between news and entertainment. In a sense, we could say that news has become entertainment.
We're going to talk about how politicians have responded to this. The film spends quite a bit of time on, which was a fairly major thing, Ronald Reagan's deregulation of the industry and all of the changes that took place as a result of that. But as the film goes on, it really doesn't seem to me, at least this is my perception, to make a whole lot of difference, be it a Republican in the White House or a Democrat in the White House. The telecommunications bill that Bill Clinton signed, the makers of the film believe, was highly problematic. And you know what's going on with the debate right now about net neutrality. What about the amount of money that this communications industry pays to people who are in office to get what they want? We'll discuss that as well. And some other stories. The story of the San Jose Mercury News year-long investigation into the origins of the crack cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles. The reporter who spent a year covering that, what happened to the story and what happened tragically to him, among other conversations we'll have this hour. We're talking about Shadows of Liberty, Media Monopoly in American Journalism, a just released documentary film, and the filmmaker and director, Jean-Philippe Tremblay, is our guest this hour. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'll be with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We go to phone calls. Jean-Philippe Tremblay is our guest, and many questions to the audience. One of the major ones is, where do you go to get your news information? Do you use the mainstream media, NBC, CBS, and ABC? Do you go to them for sources of news? Who is doing fine investigative reporting? Some are saying that because of the internet, we really can get all kinds of information from all over the world, so perhaps our sources are more rather than fewer. But there is great concern about media conglomeration. And what do you think about that? We'd like to hear your thoughts. 800-486-8655 is our number. Mike in Manitowoc, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Part of the reason I think we're in this dilemma is because of apathy on part of the public, and I just wanted to make two suggestions and find out what your guest thinks about them. The FCC has become very soft when it comes to enforcing the license regulations, and I'd like to suggest two things. First of all, if you have any interest in getting your media back, there is a an option for any U.S. Citizen to stop in at a radio station or a broadcast station and ask to see their public license. What that does is basically allows you to take a look at what the license is, and you'd be amazed at how many radio stations and TV stations actually don't even realize that that is an open records, and particularly what I call partisan radio. When you have people who are using our public airwaves, our airwaves, to do a political agenda, and you're not comfortable with it, just stop in at the radio station or TV station and ask to see the license, and then contact the FCC and make sure that they're doing their job. It's amazing how it gets it puts the perspective back into place where these broadcasters realize they don't own the license; they just rent it from the public. And the second thought is, when it comes to consumers basically buy products from businesses, and good business people don't want to be perceived as being partisan because they wanted to sell to everybody. So if you find a particular program that you think is political or offensive, just contact the sponsor and say, you know, I really think that you shouldn't be offending part of your base, because, you know, everybody liberals buy automobiles well, And that sponsor is going to be sensitive to the fact that they don't want to offend potential customers. And now you give the sponsor a chance to say, "Hey, I don't want to be on that program. Put me on something that's not so partisan." And then the message gets through to the broadcasters that it is the customers who ultimately decide what sells and what doesn't. And those are two simple ways of getting the broadcast license back where they belong.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Jean-Philippe?
I think that those two suggestions are they're absolutely spot on. I mean, that's exactly what we need to do. You're talking about people voicing their opinions about what's happening with the media in our communities. And you're absolutely right about the FCC. They have become very soft. They have been for decades, actually. The FCC was put into place to represent the good information for the public good. And in fact, we can say that throughout the decades, through many examples, it can be said that the FCC is actually representing these media corporations, because almost every time the FCC makes a new decision for media regulation, they seem to go in the favor of media corporations as opposed to the American public. If we understand that the government actually handed over the airwaves to private corporations, that's when they put this FCC into place in order to protect the public good, even though broadcast airwaves were handed over to private corporations. So they put these licenses into place so that every number of years, if the corporations were doing a good job and were still serving the public, then the government would renew these licenses to these corporations such as CBS and ABC and NBC. And what we've seen is that these corporations have owned it for almost 100 years now, and the licensing renewals are automatic. I mean, that question is not even asked. It's not even looked at. But if the public would actually come forward, write to the FCC, make complaints, make sure they're doing their job, then maybe we can get back on the right track. Also, the other suggestion about calling your local media outlets and letting them know about what the public actually wants, that's also a great way forward, because, that's what these corporations say. They give us reality television. They dumb down our news. And some of the rhetoric coming out of these CEOs from these corporations is that they give the people what they want. And I think that's absolutely false, and I think everyone listening would agree with me. We don't actually want garbage news. We want information in order for us to make the best decisions in our lives, and that's absolutely what we need, and we need to let our local outlets really know what matters to us, and that's really the way that we can take action.
Thank you, Mike, very much for your call. You say that Mike makes great suggestions here, but when you look at the amount of money that's going into lobbying members of Congress, the amount of money that's going into both the Democratic coffers and the Republican coffers, it's no wonder that money speaks much louder. So you have Ronald Reagan, who did a significant deregulation of the whole industry, but you had Bill Clinton signing a bill that was favorable to telecommunications. You have President Obama, who golfs with, the head of the large cable companies as we're looking at net neutrality. Isn't it hard to really counter that kind of incredible infusion of cash into politics?
It is very, very hard. You're absolutely right. Money seems to rule. What we have to understand, and again, like David Simon says in our film, is that capitalism is not the best solution for society. And when we're dealing with media, we're not dealing with nuts and bolts or hamburgers or cars. We're dealing with a social and political world. And that's what the forefathers understood that we describe in our film. That's why there were protections around the media. That's why journalism is actually included in the Constitution and protected. And when we understand that media is a pillar of a democratic society, it really needs to be protected. And now we have these big players, these private corporations, just a handful, that own and control almost all media. We have to fight back. It's not an easy fight. But it has begun, especially in the last 15, 20 years. 20 years ago, there might have been just a handful of media reform organizations. But I would say that especially since the war in Iraq, which most Americans were against, we've seen a growth of media reform organizations here in the United States. Now, it went from a handful, now they're in... Actually, they're in the thousands. There's probably 1,000 or 2,000 serious media reform organizations that are also affiliated to all sorts of progressive organizations across the country. And we have to take these steps. We have actually have had some great results. You know, in 2003, 3 million people wrote to the FCC saying no, that they didn't want, one corporation or one owner to own television, newspaper, and radio
yes.
in one town. And this cross-ownership ban has gone back and forth for the last 10 years. There are some real positive movements that have happened here in the United States, and it's about people taking those steps.
All right, let's go to some more phone calls. Matt in Wausau is next. Hi, Matt.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's common for both political parties, at least here in Wisconsin, to cite one party or the other having control of the media. I mean, you hear liberal media, you know, the Fox News stuff. Can you antiquate any kind of study that would indicate one party or another having more control over the media? I mean, obviously, television would be different than newsprint, but I'm just curious as your take, when someone refers to liberal media or Fox News or, you know, conservative media, is there one player here that has an obvious upper hand? And I'll take my answer.
All right, Matt, thanks for the call.
That's a very good question. I mean, we looked at a lot of literature, some studies do the research for our film, and I don't have one specific study that I know of that speaks directly to that, but definitely if we do some research, at a good start would be at the Columbia School of Journalism. They've done some great studies there. But I don't think, my opinion is that I don't think there's really any difference between Democrats and Republicans. We see in the film, we describe how Ronald Reagan came to power. He was always a corporate man, hired by General Electric since the 1950s to do the GE theater and all that kind of stuff. And when he was elected in 1980, he allowed the biggest media merger that anyone had ever seen when General Electric went out and bought RCA at the time. And that really exemplifies the trend that's happening today, these big media corporations that have interests in all sorts of businesses. They make jet engines, they have defense contracts, and they come and gobble up media. And when you own all of that stuff, you could just keep selling your products.
Let's go to John next in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi. There's this gentleman, Murdoch, from Great Britain, who originally from Australia, that I believe he owns the Wall Street Journal. And
yes.
I would like to ask your guest if he knows, does he own part of the media in the United States, Mr. Murdoch?
Yes, he certainly does. I mean, as you said, he became a media mogul in Australia. He kind of set up shop around the world, and his headquarters are based in New York City here in the United States. So News Corporation headquarters are in the United States. And in order for Mr. Murdoch to be able to do that, he had to become an American citizen, which, you know, he does however he does it. He gets a lot of handouts and is able to do what he does. And he owns hundreds of American news outlets, including Fox News, Fox Cinema in Los Angeles, The Wall Street Journal, and really the list goes on and on. I mean, you could fill pages and pages of everything that he owns. And he has hundreds, if not thousands, of media outlets around the world, including in the UK, as you just mentioned. Mm.
I do want to make sure that we mention, this is such a tragic story, that is included in the film, the story of the reporter Gary Webb, who did this year-long series for the San Jose Mercury News on the origins of the crack cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles, the U.S. involvement, CIA and Nicaraguan affairs and the Contras tied to the crack cocaine explosion. This was a very serious piece of journalism, and it was interesting in the film to see the response from other big-time newspapers, the Washington Post and the New York Times, who perhaps were jealous of what Gary had to do and how he was completely discredited, even though it turned out what he wrote was very true and had a tragic end. Can you discuss that episode in the film, please?
Yes. Gary Webb was an amazing journalist. He was emblematic of everything that a journalist should be. He was a journalist for most, if not all, of his adult life. What really excited him about journalism was that as a journalist, he could actually bring truth about real issues. And Gary Webb really had a passion for it. And you know, part of it was his love for the country and love for people, and he just loved to bring that kind of information, you know, to his readers. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, and he ended up going to San Jose Mercury News. You know, and he was able to make that choice because loads of newspapers in the country wanted to work with Gary Webb because he was such a great journalist. And because he was such a great journalist, he was allowed to really investigate, do long investigations for his reports. In this case, he investigated how drugs were flowing into Los Angeles, and it led him to the Contras in Nicaragua. And the Contras were sponsored by the United States to take down the democratically elected government in Nicaragua. And what Gary Webb found in his piece entitled Dark Alliance was that some of these Contras were involved in the drug trade, bringing it over to the United States. And that was done under the, you know, the American government just basically closed their eyes on this. What really led Gary Webb to this story was that these Nicaraguans were obviously guilty of a drug deal, and they weren't going to jail. They weren't going down. So he started investigating that, and that's what he found. Once he found that, and it reached the front pages of the San Jose Mercury News, it created an uproar, first of all, by the people. We have to also note that this was also one of the very first investigative pieces to reach the internet back in 1997. And the Dark Alliance website was getting over a million hits a day by people who were going up and looking at the research he had done, because he had posted everything there, court records, articles that he had researched. And the mainstream media remained silent for a number of weeks, even after the San Jose News had printed his story about Dark Alliance. And what we find is that over time, his story is not even talked about, but what the mainstream media begins to report after a while is that they start discrediting Gary Webb. Just like that, out of the blue, discrediting him as a journalist and discrediting the story that he's written. And what we have to realize here is that if you go against power here in the United States and in other countries around the world, it's very hard to relay that information. And what happens is you have a backlash from that power, from the government and their allies, and in this case, the mainstream media, because they need each other. The government needs the media, and the media needs the government in order to keep power. And what happens is when we find stories about American government closing their eyes on foreign drugs flowing into the country, a journalist gets brushed aside, and that's exactly what happened with Gary Webb.
We take more phone calls in just one moment. We're talking about the film Shadows of Liberty, which has been screened in Madison. It is on a coast-to-coast grassroots screening tour right now. It was in Chicago last week, and we'll give you more information, a website, in case you'd like a screening where you are. The filmmaker and the director of Shadows of Liberty, the media monopoly in American journalism, is our guest this hour of the program, Jean-Philippe Tremblay. And we'll be back with you in a moment. Here's the number again, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls, 800-486-8655. Steve in Chippewa Falls is next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Now, and as I was driving home, I heard you speaking about the loss of jobs in the newsrooms. And I wonder if that can really be used as evidence one way or the other for what's going on, or if it's really just the reality that the Internet has wiped out the people can get their data from around the world. There just aren't as many slots available for people working in newsrooms. And then technology. I noticed that here, camera people go out, they set up their camera, they stand in front of it, and they do an interview. You don't have that camera guy going along anymore. So
right.
I wonder if it's the Internet and technology are just sort of, very disruptive. And I think that the people who are working in the newsrooms are going, well, this is terrible, but it's just the way it's going. And then on the other thing, I wonder if news from the people, people aren't considered journalists, like on YouTube or whatnot. There's this sort of sense that everything has to be peer reviewed and nothing is really news unless the journalist class agrees that it's news. And then I'll do one more thing. The Wall Street Journal, without Murdoch, it would have pretty much just gone out of business. He picked it up for peanuts because it was just about done, because that's what's happening to big newspapers. Nobody's buying them because nobody's paying to read them.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, thanks for the call. Jean-Philippe?
I think that's a very good comment about new technology. And, I mean, we have to realize that there's no doubt that the Internet is the future of journalism. But the thing is that we have to make a separation between technology and information. I mean, the Internet is the most amazing tool. There's no doubt about it. We can communicate around the world very easily. We can write about our own opinions, about things that we read, things that we see. We can put our photos immediately up on the net about things that are happening in our community, in our world. And that's an amazing thing. That's a plus that we have, and it's a massive plus. We've never had anything like it, and that is amazing. What happens, though, is that, it's not technology at the snap of a finger that gives us information. What we have in newsrooms are journalists sitting down, writing and reporting and investigating information. That takes people. And we have to look at it, and the way I look at it is that, if you have, maybe if we go back 30 years ago, let's say, and we have journalists writing for a newspaper, let's say 300 journalists in a newsroom writing for a newspaper, well, today we have to have those same 300 journalists with their heads down writing on a computer and investigating over the Internet. And not only do we need those same 300 journalists in that newsroom from 30 years ago, but because we've evolved, we have more things to cover. There are more people on this earth in our communities. We actually have to have 600 people down on their computer, researching the internet, communicating, and investigating. Investigating a story, you really have to, you have to be present. You have to cover the White House. You have to have journalists looking at every ministry of the government. Every department has to be covered. That takes days. You have to be there every single day. You really have to investigate a story like Gary Webb did over a one-year period. That is people power. You need people to do that job. Technology cannot do it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's very nice that we have the internet and people commenting about everything that's happening in the world. And that's great because it helps us to learn about what people are thinking and how they feel about what's happening around us. But at the end of the day, we need journalists with their heads down using the internet, and we don't need less that we had 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. We need more.
We need fine investigative journalism. Nothing beats it. Let's go to Jamie in Oshkosh next. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. Piggybacking off of what he said, the future is being able to access as much information as possible, and most people just go to the online websites or the TV stations that they trust in, and they don't get a full view. But my question has to do with Edward Snowden and how he tried to release this information to the public because he saw all the cracks that the NSA was going through and filling and really shouldn't have, and he had no outlet. So he took the information and brought it to The Guardian, which is the only place that he trusted was a foreign journalism, and I was just wondering if you could speak with that.
Yeah, that's an amazing example, Ed Snowden, and we have other examples, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, and, these are people who are using the new technology and, in a way, bringing a new kind of journalism. It's simply exposing documents that the people have not seen. They're classified documents that speak about government and corporations that in a way are acting in the name of the public, but the public has no idea what's happening. So for me, it's just amazing revelations that we've discovered by Edward Snowden, and we really have to consider him a hero, and we have to speak more about what he's done, really. It has to be looked at every day, and we have to become aware that this is what the new technology has allowed us to do. It's also pushed the envelope about what we can publish and bring real information to the people so that they know what's going on in their government.
Mm. Thanks very much, Jamie, for your call. Jerry is next in Menasha. Hi.
Hi. My original question was going to be whether your guest had distribution nationally for Shadows of Liberty. Evidently, it's going to be shown in some of the major markets, but is this something that will get national distribution, or that they have to find somebody to fund a national distribution of it, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, our film and the word market actually don't really go well together because we made an independent film about what we believe is the most important subject to deal with today, which is the media here in the United States. We've spoken to, there's dozens of groundbreaking American journalists in our film that tell their stories about American media and what's happening. That being said, our film has not been very, very popular in terms of distribution here in the United States. We have sold the film to other countries like Japan and Norway and Canada and Australia and Italy. That being said, the United States is one of the hardest places for us to be able to present the film, which is amazing. We do have educational distribution through a company called Bullfrog Films, so that's for semi-theatrical showings. If you want your local library or universities or high schools to order the film and to have other sorts of what we call semi-theatrical screenings. Bullfrog Films represents us for that. Otherwise, we do have KCET Link TV based in California that do broadcast the film periodically through their satellite network. So that's a satellite network, and I understand that they maybe have somewhere along the lines of 30 million subscribers to that satellite network. So what we're doing now is we're doing an independent tour. We are we have a car. We're driving to a different city every day in 10 different states, and we're doing 15 screenings, and we did that independently. Myself and my colleague Deborah Brown called communities. We called media reform organizations. We called media outlets, and we let them know about our film and asked if they would be interested in co-sponsoring a screening of our film in their community. And that's the way we're going about it. So this is a very much an independent tour, and I invite everyone to look at our website, shadowsofliberty.org, and there's all sorts of ways of how you can see the film.
All right, it's shadowsofliberty.org. You mentioned being able to sell this in Canada and Japan and other countries. There is a segment in the film that's pretty amazing and quite a story, which you want more information on after you see this, the U.S. sale, possible sale of nuclear secrets to Iran, Libya, and North Korea by a high official in the U.S., State Department, I believe. This story, you say, became a big story elsewhere in the world. In other newspapers, it was played up very much, but we don't know very much about it here. Do you think it's that's the case, Jean-Philippe, with lots of stories, that foreign press picks up on them and we don't hear about them?
Unfortunately, I think that is the case for many stories. What happens is that many stories actually make the headlines in other countries in the world, but do not get reported here in the United States. And even if they are reported, they're reported on the fringes, on page 28 or something like that. And when that happens is that they don't hit the media echo chamber. And when the stories, they don't hit the media echo chamber, mm-hmm. then no one actually really finds out about it. And we tell the story, a story in our film about exactly that. We have an American high official that allegedly sold nuclear secrets. We have a whistleblower that's willing to tell her story to the media and supported by another great whistleblower, Daniel Ellsberg, and she has people around her. And even at that, the mainstream media does not touch her story about these alleged sales. And what we see is that around the world, like in the UK, in The Guardian, in India, in Turkey, in Canada, this story actually makes the headlines. So we have to ask ourselves some questions, and we have to let more and more Americans know about this, that they're actually being robbed about the information that a lot of countries around the world actually know about.
We thank you so much for being with us, Jean-Philippe Tremblay, and best of luck in all your endeavors, sir.
Thank you so much, and come out and support our tour. We're going for another 10 days, and we want to do this for the rest of the year. So I ask everyone to visit our website, find out more information about our tour, how you can support us, and thank you again for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you're very welcome. The website, again, is shadowsofliberty.org. That's all together, Shadows of Liberty, all one word. So that's that, and that's the name of the film as well. And there's a lot in the film. We touched on some of the major stories, but also who owns media. That whole part is pretty thoroughly documented. So thanks to Marika Suval for producing this program, and thanks to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We have news coming up momentarily, and we'll return and talk about, we love doing presidential shows, the young FDR, how he made the decision to go into politics instead of living a life of leisure, which he could have done. All of that coming up.